So the business idea actually just came out of necessity. I was not looking to start an apparel company with no experience in the industry, but I had spoken to some other companies to see if they would start a line of workwear for women, and no one really jumped at it, so I went for it myself.
This is Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. A trailblazer is a pioneer and innovator, someone who blazes new tracks through wild country. If you're looking for a modern-day trailblazer, look no further than Sarah Calhoun. Born in Connecticut, Sarah was inspired to relocate to small-town Montana by author Ivan Doig's memoir, This House of Sky. After falling in love with the writer and his work, Sarah found herself living in his rural hometown of White Sulphur Springs. Her time in the small community has been dedicated to supporting rural small business and nonprofit organizations. In 2006, Sarah launched Red Ants Pants, an apparel company focused on manufacturing women's work pants that fit, function, and flatter. Sarah went on to found the Red Ants Pants Foundation in 2011. An organization that fosters strength and self-reliance in women and in rural agricultural communities. That same year, Sarah also launched the Red Ants Pants Music Festival, a country music festival in White Sulphur Springs, which attracted 18,000 attendees in 2019. Today on Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, Sarah and I will talk about her apparel business, her foundation, and her music festival. We'll discuss her dedication to reviving rural America and why she's made women's empowerment a focal point of her career. Production support for Can Do comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. Good morning, Sarah. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well.
Sarah is joining us this morning from Peak Recording in Bozeman, Montana. So first off, right out of the gate, where did the Red Ants Pants name come from?
Well, Arnie, in an ant colony, it's the female ants that do all the work. And that name just popped into my head. I found out that small fact, and it turns out that the male ants simply breed and die.
And so that became your mantra for the company, right?
It sure did. Workwear for women, yep.
And so why this particular business to express your passion for rural American women's leadership?
So the business idea actually just came out of necessity. I was not looking to start an apparel company with no experience in the industry, but I had spoken to some other companies to see if they would start a line of workwear for women, and no one really jumped at it, so I went for it myself.
And did you know anything about running a apparel business?
Not a thing. I had never worked in the industry or even taken a business course in my life.
So how'd you learn to run a company?
Oh, I'm still learning. It's a process for sure. I got a copy of Small Business for Dummies right out of the gate and learned how to write a business plan and have some great mentors, certainly, on my advisory board. A lot of folks helping out along the way. One of my first very fateful interactions was reading that book downtown in Bozeman when I first moved there in 2004. And a guy noticed my book and we got to chatting, and it turned out for the past 20 years he had been doing production and design for a little company called Patagonia. So quite a fateful interaction, and he's on my advisory board to this day.
So luck, fate, a combination of reading books for dummies, and here you are, you know, 15 years later.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And a lot of hard work along the way, for sure.
Well, I'm sure. So how'd you come to Montana?
So my background was I grew up on a farm back east and then went to school for environmental studies, then started instructing for Outward Bound and leading trail crews right out of college. So I was working all around the West and, again, just having trouble finding pants that actually fit and function well for women getting work done, and recognized that a lot of other women were having these same struggles. My last crew was in the Cascades, and I had recently been down in Arizona working with an Apache Youth Corps and then Southern Cali after the 2003 fires, and just looking to put some roots down. And I had never actually visited Montana, but it always held a certain appeal to me, and I just drove through Missoula actually initially, and then kept going to Bozeman, and that felt right for a start. And after about a year there, I was ready to move to a small ag town similar to where I grew up, and that's when I read Ivan Doig's book, This House of Sky.
And being in White Sulphur Springs, has it been difficult finding employees and vendors and partners to run your business?
So White Sulphur Springs is the county seat of Marr County, population 900, and it's about 100 miles from anywhere in central Montana. I actually have had very good luck with workforce and hiring, and I think there's a lot of benefits we often overlook for the potential of small business in small town America. And I think the quality of living is high, but the cost of living is low, and there's a lot of good hardworking people and historic buildings on main streets that need to get renovated. And we've got incredibly fast internet in Marr County, and UPS and FedEx and Postal Service, and I've found it very, very helpful actually being in a smaller town.
You mentioned the renovation of the buildings, and some of that is already happening, isn't that true?
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And I was lucky enough to purchase an old, actually on the National Historic Registry, an old saddle shop built in 1880, a brick building in downtown White Sulphur Springs. It has some rentals upstairs, and I live right behind the shop.
Do you think the momentum created by Red Ants Pants and White Sulphur Springs has led to this renaissance?
I think there's certainly some influence there, yes. I think the music festival and folks being aware of what a great town this is, and now they come year-round to the spa and the ski hill and the Smith River and the hunting and the fishing. And once locals see one business working, then it provides a little more support and hope for starting another one. And the snowball effect is real for sure. But that being said, it's been a classic boom and bust town, originally in mining, a lot of ranching still. But the timber industry, the mill went out in the 80s and there was mass exodus back then. So the whole county's been rebuilding since then. So I think it was primed and ready for some new excitement and life brought in, and it's been going pretty well.
So not only is the company based there, but you launched a music festival. Tell me what the inspiration for that was.
Back in 2011, been in business for about 5 years with the Pants Company, had done a lot of work on the road, getting to know different customers and hearing their stories on Tour de Pants. And really wanted to bring people together in a larger way, and certainly using music to as a tool to do that. And there was absolutely an element of trying to brand the Pants Company more. But then as started the music festival, decided I wanted to hopefully make some money from it, have some proceeds, and give it to some sort of a charitable organization. And in trying to determine what that would look like, decided, well, let's just start our own charitable organization. So that's when the Red Ants Pants Foundation was born, in support of women's leadership, working family farms and ranches, and rural communities.
And has it met your expectations, the music festival?
Yes, and then some. None of us really knew what we were getting into that first year. And again, no experience in the industry, but it took a lot of hard work, a lot of community support, hundreds and hundreds of volunteers, and a lot of people just believing in a bigger idea and mission of gathering a lot of folks to come celebrate rural Montana. And that first year when we had 6,000 people attend, that tripled the county's population. And we really were blown away with the enthusiasm and the attendance and the support. And it's been on the up and up ever since.
So you're raising money for the foundation through the festival. What are you doing with the money?
Yes, great question. So proceeds from the festival do go to support our foundation, as well as the festival is a program of our foundation. So the first program we got off the ground was our grant cycle, and that's we donate and award gifts of proceeds to different organizations and other programs across the state whose projects parallel our mission. So we've been able to gift over $115,000 across the state, which is pretty exciting, to 93 different grantees over the years. And then we got a timber skills course off the ground. So this is a 4-day course teaching women how to run chainsaws and do carpentry 101. And it's a pretty empowering women in the trades experience for those interested. That's always in September in White Sulphur Springs. And 2 years ago, we just launched our newest program, which is our Girls Leadership Program. This is super exciting, and we're seeing a huge need for this of It's a year-long program designed for junior year high school girls from rural Montana, and we select 8 a year and pair them with a young professional mentor, and they have 3 different weekend-long retreats throughout the year, a lot of webinars, and then they work with their mentor on a local community project to really practice these leadership skills, and it is going very well, and we're super excited with the feedback and the impact of that program.
So the foundation, the music festival, Red Ants Pants in general, usually need startup money, seed capital to launch. Where'd yours come from?
So starting the pants company, I bootstrapped it basically. I had a little cash saved up from my work, and then I was able to borrow privately for some of the startup funds for fabric and startup inventory, that sort of thing. Again, the cost of doing business and purchasing real estate in a rural town is pretty affordable, so that was a huge benefit on my end. And on the foundation side, I actually started with a $0 budget, which was a challenge, but we made it work, and I think I borrowed $10,000 for about 2 weeks to get all, you know, we had the advance ticket sales to float things until I had to do the talent deposits. And from then on up, we've been self-reliant with our funding, which is pretty incredible. I will also say I've been very fortunate to have good relationships with local bankers in Montana, and I would highly recommend that to any business owners, to really have a good relationship with a banker who believes in you as a person and an entrepreneur and a community member.
Were your bankers used to dealing with a woman entrepreneur?
Now, yes. It must have been 2004 when I first went to a bank in Bozeman, and I had been working with the SBA on my fancy business plan, and that was definitely more of the initial response was, what do you need this for? Like, we already got Carhartts for men. And it's like, yes, but let's take a step back and think a little more on this. So I think that has certainly been changing as it should.
You mentioned Carhartts for men. So does Red Ants Pants make any products for men?
So we don't specifically make a men's line, but we have a straight cut and a curvy cut and 74 sizes in 2 different styles of pant. And we have a lot of men now wearing our women's pants, which is just fine and dandy. We'll sell them to anyone.
The space is a very competitive space, clothing and apparel. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of wreckage in the fast lane in that industry. Are you meeting what you thought your goals would be? And if so, what do you think attributed to that?
You know, it's funny when you're writing your business plan at the age of 25 with no experience, and you think, I was thinking I was going to sell a lot more product right out of the gate. It's been a slow and steady increase. Also, I have that classic curse of an entrepreneur where I keep starting new projects, and the festival has pulled me away from the pants company in a big way just because of capacity challenges. So the past couple of years, we're finally under control with all our operations and have all the right staff in place and systems on the festival and foundation side. So now I'm actually putting more effort back into the pants company to see what it can do. We've launched a couple new product lines this past year and a half, a new lighter weight pant with some stretch and a new work shirt, and our wool vests are doing well. And it's been exciting to get some more energy back into the pants company. So re-engaging those goals and tightening up some manufacturing decisions. Everything is made in America, which is fantastic. And we've got, we work really closely with a mother-daughter factory cut and sew production facility out in Seattle area. And we are trying actually to get more and more of our production back into Montana. Our leather belts are made in white sulfur, as well as our work aprons, and we're also doing custom hemming right in our shop in White Sulphur Springs, and looking to maybe spread some more into the Montana area.
In this current business climate, everybody's looking to figure out online sales and partnering with people like Amazon and other sources. You decided to do a direct sales model for Red Ants Pants. Why did you choose that pathway?
Yes, I think it's pretty important to make it personal with our customers and our community. And I think the businesses that perhaps stay a little smaller and have better relationships might be more sustainable in the long term. You know, we have, with a storefront, although it's not in perhaps the most populated area of the nation, having a brick and mortar storefront combined with an online presence is a pretty neat model in my mind. We've done some catalog stuff as well. And we do some pop-up shops around the state and the country just to make sure we're getting out to the people. But to me, that just seemed a lot more manageable than going through other retailers. And Amazon has, they keep calling, but I don't know that I believe in that model. I think it's important to be a solid small business that supports your community and your vendors and your customers and your staff. And I think there's a lot of potential there for sure.
Has your interaction with customers led to any new business ideas or product ideas?
Oh, we get great feedback all the time. I got a call with a gal this week about a painter pant design, and we're talking to some other specific industry folks to really get a little more of a narrow focus on different trades work pants and how we can better respond to the need of our customers across the nation.
We're speaking with Sarah Calhoun, founder of Red Ants Pants. Support for this episode of Can Do comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. Let me harken back to some early days for you. When you were an environmental science student at Gettysburg College in Pennsylvania, did you think this is where you would be now physically and career-wise?
So I knew I was going to be doing something that I created. I did not know what that would look like. And I was definitely not predicting I would be in the business world at all. I remember being pretty judgy back in college. You know, I was trying to save the world, and I was looking down on those business students that were just out there to make money. And it's just funny where we end up, right? I do remember one of my environmental science papers my senior year, my professor was like, Calhoun, you really, really should be in marketing. That she was like D- on the science paper, you know. It's funny when you know, we don't necessarily know when we choose what we're going to study. And as long as we're learning how to think and write and work critically, I think that's the important part about a college education, certainly, and keep trying new things and broaden our minds. But that being said, now having had some experience in the business world and in the nonprofit world, it's pretty fascinating to see what is possible and what can be done with business, both, you know, for the good and for the bottom line.
Well, it's an interesting melding of the two. You were an Outward Bound program instructor for 5 years. How did that inform your views on business, and in particular, in women's leadership?
That's a great one. I think a lot of my work in the backcountry and for programs like Outward Bound, the mission and the values of my work have been at the forefront and really being principled in why I'm doing what I'm doing and just working from a really strong base of integrity and self-reliance and a strong work ethic and community. Those are all things that were really strong within Outward Bound and teaching leadership to youth. And then, you know, and I was fortunate to be raised by parents who told me I could be anything I want to be, and I believe them. And I think being a woman in business too, there's just so much potential. And I, you know, the timing I'm fortunate to be born where I was when I was, and to keep pushing this envelope of women stepping forward in these bigger leadership roles, both in business and communities and politics and all of it. And I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg.
So you grew up in Connecticut, you were in Pennsylvania, you ended up migrating. You worked in other places around the United States, but you ended up migrating to Montana and focusing on Montana women and Montana women empowerment. Can you compare and contrast where things are here in Montana to the other places that you've been?
I think what we see in rural Montana especially is that you look at any ranch wife, as they say, not a rancher, but a ranch wife, but they are doing just as much work as the actual, their husband, right? And they're out there fully hands-on feeding and roping and branding and doing everything. They're all calving right now and raising the kids and cooking for the branding party and, you know, keeping up the household and the marriage and all of that. So I think in Montana, though, it's just tradition in everyone knows we all have to pitch in and take care of each other as families and as neighbors to make it. And that kind of community strength in our work ethic, I think, just comes through loud and clear. Not to say that there's not that in other parts of the country, but in Montana, that tradition in the small towns, at least has been really, really, like, kind of worked and bred into us as people. And you gotta take care of each other and work your butt off.
And what are the areas that you have chosen to focus on through the foundation that are the most glaring in need?
So the girls' leadership certainly is a big one. And that, I think, there's just, if you look at the data on rural girls especially, we're really focusing on trying to increase hope for our youth, pride in our rural communities, and strength and courage in our leadership. So that piece is just, you know, get them early and teach them these really fundamental leadership skills so that they can then apply them through any angle of their work or profession or community or career down the line, and really intentionally building that good old girls club for them with an alumni group from this program, which is exciting. Keeping traditional trades and work skills alive, I think, is an important thing, but really the focus of rural communities and what potential we have there and the values that do come through from living in rural communities, I think both teaching that and preserving that and enriching that is really going to be at the forefront of our programming.
Are you working with Native American community as well in Montana?
So we don't have any current programs specifically targeted towards the Native American community. We have had participants in our Girls Leadership Program, which has been fantastic, and we'd love to encourage that as much as possible. But yeah, we haven't gotten deep enough into that yet.
You managed three different organizations that overlap, but also have specific, you know, individual functions and challenges. You know, the apparel business in and of itself, a foundation, and then the music festival. How do you balance that in your life?
At moments, I wonder if I balance any of it very well at all. It's a tricky one. Time management is huge, and just understanding priorities and what is on our agenda to move forward for each of the entities, and not competing with each other within our own entities. And so, you know, there's day-to-day management challenges, but the big neat thing is the values and the mission. That there's so much interweaving of these threads with, you know, the self-reliance and the work ethic and the women's leadership and all of that. It touches with the pants and the community and the festival and the chainsaws and the music and the leadership trainings. Like, all of it does get woven together in a pretty neat way. And it is hard. I have to step back a lot and just look at the big picture of what we're trying to do and how we're going to get there, and what are the most important next steps to take.
How big an organization, how big is your staff in White Sulphur Springs?
So for the Pants Company, we have one full-time store manager and about six part-time, an accountant, two contract gals, one communications director, and another strategic player, and a part-time design person as well, helps with some of the sourcing, and then myself. And then on the foundation side, there's two of us half-time year-round. And then on the festival side, we've got four of us year-round, a handful of summer staff, and then 90 event staff and 220 volunteers. So it's a lot of moving pieces for sure.
The music business is a tough business. What challenges do you face organizing a festival every year like the one you're now attracting almost 20,000 people to?
Yeah, it's a whole nother industry to learn, right? It's also pretty male dominated. I have had to learn the fast track of how to book bands and work with the agencies down in Nashville. But I think our bigger challenge is that it's important to us to have this event in a working cow pasture right outside of White Sulphur. So because of that, we're very infrastructure heavy. We have to build everything from the ground up, and, you know, bringing in power and water and porta potties, and then removing all of that and making sure everyone's safe and security and EMS and fire and law enforcement and all the logistics are pretty cumbersome, not having an arena to work off, right? But that's part of the magic of what we're doing. And again, it's so mission driven with the foundation and trying to teach a lot of agricultural and work skills on site and really boost a local rural economy. So it's all worth it, but it's a hefty budget, and we have a lot of work year round to pull it off. So, and then we're also looking with an increased landscape of more and more festivals and music venues popping up across the state, which is fantastic. And hopefully that's just teaching all of us to appreciate live music, and having so many more opportunities will encourage everyone to go even more often.
How do the acts feel about performing in a cow pasture?
Oh, they love it. You know, I'm sure there's some questions at first, but they are so appreciative of the landscape and the authenticity of the feel of the event. And our fans, they absolutely love our fans. And they say that time and time again. Like Merle Haggard on stage he could be a little rough around the edges, I guess, but he was just beaming and loved our crowd so much that he wanted to come back the next year. And lots of feedback like that from the artists. So it's really rewarding.
The 2020 festival is not too far off. What can you tell us about the music festival for this coming season?
Yeah, so we are gearing up for our 10th year anniversary, which is hard to believe that a whole decade has gone by. And to celebrate that, we are bringing in all of our favorite bands from the first decade of programming. So these are all repeat bands. So it's going to be a big old family reunion at the festival. The dates this year, July 23rd through 26th. In White Sulphur Springs, Montana. April 4th, we are going to have a big lineup release party in White Sulphur. We do a block party with Tubasset Brewing. We'll have music there, and then working with Stageline Pizza and the Strand Theater to announce each band. And it's a good time for everyone to get out and get done with calving and come out and celebrate a bit.
You are a leader in rural America. You speak all over the country on this topic. You know, you're growing your business. You're using a lot of your profits to enrich the lives of young women. What advice do you give to young entrepreneurs about launching their business careers or choosing their career path?
Mm-hmm. That's a great one. I would say do your homework, certainly. Ask for help. Find some good mentors. That's always a big piece. And go for it. I think there's a lot of... I think as women especially, we tend to hold ourselves back until we feel 100% ready for something. And I don't think we have time to wait for that anymore. I think we have to do our due diligence and then have a little courage and step up to the plate. I also think, you know, in your 20s or even through school or after school, like try as many different types of things as you possibly can. And as long as you're learning from every job and every experience and kind of honing in on what your skill set is and what your gifts can be to the world, then I think that's all heading in the right direction.
As you look back on your own career, if you were to do it all over again, what would you do differently, if anything?
I think it would have been beneficial to me to take some accounting courses or hire an accountant earlier on in the process. You know, it's a challenge with a small business. You have to wear all the hats, and finance is not my strong suit for sure. It's super empowering to learn it and understand it, and that's been an ongoing process and experience for me. But I think having a really good numbers person in the game is pretty essential.
And what's been the most rewarding part of this journey and this experience for you so far?
I think just proving to myself what's possible. That's a big part. I'm certainly proud of that. And also just to see what's possible on a community level and a human level. And there's certainly been a lot of pride built into this process in Marr County, and that is something that's worth fighting for.
So what does the future look like for Sarah Calhoun?
the million-dollar question. So I am working on a historic building project in White Sulphur that I hope to turn into a larger community gathering space and a music venue and artist residency program. And there's a lot of potential with that, I think, to have a place for folks to come and gather year-round. Also, very slowly working on my book. That progress is painfully slow, however, making the time for that. And I like the idea of a rural institute and what we could do, kind of being a center point for some rural think tanks and conversations moving forward of what we can do to better rural America.
Sarah, you lead an exciting, rich, and rewarding life. Thanks for joining me today and sharing your invigorating story.
Thank you for having me, Arnie.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Peter Hoag and Bo Baker in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guest contact information and content from all our shows. Join us next time when our guest will be Lance Trebisch, CEO and co-owner of Event Groove, an e-commerce event platform and online event management company. Once again, I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity.